everyone, and welcome to Minute 111 of Season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we foobar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, is Bubba Wheat from It's Time to Rewind. Welcome back to the show, Bubba.
It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's always fun having you on, and I always like finding little things that, just to annoy you. You know, but there's no Amish people this time, so you're off the hook on that one. You know, we won't talk about how much electricity they use in Amish households this season. So, actually, before we start, why don't you tell everyone and me your background with this movie? Do you remember when you first saw it? It's a movie you've seen numerous times. Was this possibly your first time seeing it? Who knows?
You know, it's funny because I've been using Letterboxd for a long time now, and so I log every movie I watch, which is a lot fewer movies these days than it used to be. But whenever I went to log this yesterday, I looked at my history, and apparently the first and only other time that I watched Saving Private Ryan was exactly 11 years ago yesterday.
Wow. You see, that is so cool. I love when that happens because I also look back. I don't use it from Letterboxd, but I look back at the last time I watched a movie. And I do find that there are times where I randomly will watch a movie on the exact same day, years apart. You know, not on purpose or anything like that. It's not like, you know, Groundhog Day where, you know, okay, February 2nd, you got to sit and watch it. You know, so therefore, okay, you'll have it numerous times on February 2nd. But it's just... that just fascinates me that for you it was the same day. How many years did you say it was
since last? It was 11, 2014. 11. Oh, yeah, wow. So, and I watched it. The last time was for my other podcast, my FilmWise podcast, because at the time it was a movie that my guests wanted to talk about, and it was a movie that was on my watch list as something that I had never seen before, and I meant to get to look up who the guest was, but I don't remember who the guest was, but I remember that it was paired with a superhero or a comic book movie that they had never seen before, and that was Constantine.
How is Constantine connected? Did you try like to...
No, I don't.
It doesn't not have like to a, be a connection. It's not like...
Yeah, it's not like the Matt cast. It's just right. Kind of a tit for tat, you know. You know, it's just kind of pairing a classic with a superhero movie, and the only connection is that I hadn't seen the classic movie, and they had never seen the superhero comic book movie.
Mm-hmm. And what was your impression then, and what is your impression now of this movie?
I mean, I thought it was great, and you know, I'll talk about it a little bit more probably, I believe, Wednesday, because you know, I would say that. In terms of film genres, my two least watched film genres are Westerns and war movies. So it is really an underseen genre for me, but I thought this was really well done, and I was glad that I had an excuse to watch it. I think that it really captures the chaos of war, but it has good characters to really personalize their journey.
Right. It's very true. It's very, very true. And so, I mean, again, it took you 11 years to go rewatch it. Exactly. So, you know, it means it wasn't something that you know, was bugging you for a while that maybe you got to recheck it out.
Yeah. And in general, like, except for, you know, a small handful of comfort favorites, I'm not one that's often rewatches movies. I'm always more interested. Well, if I have the choice to watch a movie that I've never seen or a movie that I've seen before, I'll almost always choose to watch a movie that I've never seen before.
Okay. All right. I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. And, did you remember the movie when you rewatched it now? Or
I had forgotten quite a bit of it, but I remembered, you know, a lot of the main beats. I kind of forgotten the order in which people had died, but I remembered a lot of the main like the main scenes, like the of course the beach scene at the beginning, which is hard to forget, and then you have like the machine gun turret, the machine gun hole scene, and then the what was it, the and like Mellish's death, which I remember whenever you first emailed me, and I was trying to remember with like a blank slate, and the only scene that kind of came to mind was Mellish's death, was was really the big memorable moment in this movie for me.
Right. Okay. Did you remember the morphing twist, or did that shock you again?
Well, I mean, I had it's funny because, you know, in terms of Saving Private Ryan, I feel like one of its lasting legacies is the morphing scene. And anytime anybody talks about, you know, I feel old, they'll use the gif of Matt Damon morphing into the old guy.
Right. Okay. So, in other words, you remembered that Miller didn't make it out.
Well, I don't think I would have remembered, like I didn't remember who all passed away, but I have been listening, so I, you
Okay,
know,
that's true.
I remember because it has been discussed quite a few times. The
Oops.
other thing that I did notice in terms of like the mirroring, and I think one reason why people, like whenever you're remembering, is because we do get the, you know, the close-up on old Ryan's face right before we go into the Omaha Beach, and then about 10 minutes later we get a very similar close-up on Tom Hanks's face.
Correct. Well, again, it's done to make us feel the first time you're watching it that that's what's going to be happening, that this is, Miller. But and obviously over the last 110 episodes, I've discussed this many times with many of my various guests about whether that was it's a good thing or a bad thing. So it's and the jury's out on that one. It's not a question of one being for sure and the other one not. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you were interested in rewatching it to rejoin me this season. So thank you very much for taking the plunge once again.
No problem.
Okay, so minute 111 begins with Ryan not being able to believe his ears, and ends with Ryan acting defiantly. So we ended things on Friday with Miller basically explaining to Ryan why they're there and what the whole story is. So this minute just ends or starts perfectly with Ryan saying, first he says to himself, he says, doesn't make any sense. And then he says it out loud, it doesn't make sense, sir. Why? Why do I deserve to go? Why did any of these guys? They all fought just as hard as me. So it's, I like the way that they do this, that it's very difficult for Ryan to come to terms with it, but I think part of it is that he's going through the trauma of actually thinking about the fact that his, three brothers are now dead. I think that's part of the whole idea here, because what he's saying also doesn't make so much sense. Like, what's the difference between him and these other guys? Well, we just explained to you the difference. You just lost three brothers. There's, these guys are here to fight also, but you've got a ticket to go home because of, what's happened in your family. That type of thing. So he, I and Matt Damon does a nice job of making us see that his character is somewhat in shock about all of this and isn't really sure how he should react and what he's supposed to be doing here. I like how they do that from that perspective.
Yeah, it's. I think he plays this whole moment is kind of a nice mix of shocked and defiant and a little bit petulant too.
It's true. And then Miller says to him, "Is that what you're supposed to, what they're supposed to tell your mother when they send her another folded American flag?" So, again, that's a very harsh comment for Miller to be making. He's basically saying, "If we don't take you out of here, you're going to be dead." And he says it in it's a very blatant way, but it's also a subtle way because it says when they send her another folded American flag. So, it's an interesting way for him to say this. Now, what do you know about the whole idea of folding flags?
I know that they're, I'm not exactly big on my military history, and kind of all I know is that there is a very specific way that the American flags are supposed to be folded, and in this in those situations.
Right. Okay. Do you know when they started to give family members folded flags?
No idea.
Okay. So the tradition itself began in World War One and in around 1923. So again, we're talking over 100 years ago. They decided to create what would be known as the etiquette of the code of etiquette of the flag. Right. And so they started that's when they started the idea of raising the flag and lowering the flag every day and stuff like that. And one of the things the idea was is that you fold it in a certain way also. Okay. The way that you fold a flag is you first fold it in half lengthwise, then you fold it again half lengthwise again. And you always make sure that the blue is on the outside. And then one person then holds the flag by the blue side, and another makes a triangle fold in the opposite end and continues to make triangular folds until the entire flag is a triangle. And then you tuck the loose end of the flag into the pocket, and therefore you still have the blue field and white stars that are visible. But I found like some really fascinating stuff about it that you basically have 13 folds when you're folding an American flag, and each one of the folds it represents something else. So the first fold is a symbol of life, and the second fold signifies the belief in eternal life, and the third fold is made in honor and tribute to the veteran departing our ranks and who gave a portion of his or her life for the defense of the country to attain peace. The fourth fold exemplifies our weaker nature as citizens trusting in God. The fifth fold is an acknowledgement of the country to the country. The idea is that it's our country, whether it's right or wrong, it's still our country. The sixth fold is known as where our hearts lie, and it's with our heart that we pledge allegiance to the flag. The seventh fold is a tribute to the armed forces, for it's through the armed forces that we protect our country and our flag against all enemies. The eighth fold is a tribute to the one who enters the valley of the shadow of death, and we might not see the light of day, and to honor our mother for whom our it flies on Mother's Day. The ninth fold is an honor to womanhood, for it has been through their faith, love, loyalty, and devotion that the character of men and women who have made this country great have been molded. The tenth fold is a tribute to father, for he too has given his sons and daughters for the defense of the country. The 11th fold is the eyes of the Hebrew citizens, representing the lower portion of the seal of David and King Solomon, and glorifies in the eyes of God, in their eyes, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The 12th fold is the eyes of the Christian citizen, representing an emblem of eternity, and glorifies in their eyes God, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. And the last fold, when the flag is completely folded, the stars are uppermost, reminding us of our national motto, "In God We Trust." So it's just very interesting the way that they, that someone came up with the idea that there's exactly 13 folds in this. Like when I first saw the 13 folds, I thought it was somehow connected maybe to the 13 colonies or something like that.
Which I'm sure that's a part of it too, but you know, maybe that's like one of those things that it's so obvious that they don't spell it out.
Right. And I saw another list that gives 12 folds, where each of them is also for a different significance, but here it's a little shorter. It doesn't explain all of them. So the first fold is for liberty. Second is for unity. Third is justice. Fourth is perseverance. Fifth is hardiness. Sixth is valor. Seventh is purity. Eighth is innocence. Ninth is sacrifice. Tenth is honor. The 11th, independence. And the 12th, truth.
Yeah, the first one with the 13 folds, that's the way it's written, almost feels like a poem too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's true. And all right, it's interesting. I mean, they claim in this article that I have here that anyone at a formal flag folding ceremony, whether it be on Flag Day, Memorial Day, July 4th, Veterans Day, or at a military funeral, you know, if you think of these 13 meanings, it will give you a more uplifting experience about what's actually happening, stuff like that. I found that to be a little fascinating, the whole idea that they do that. So Ryan then, basically responds to Miller and says, well, you tell her that you found me. I was here, and I was with the only brothers that I have left, and that there's no way I was going to desert them. I think she'll understand that. There's no way I'm leaving this bridge. Now, I don't really know Ryan's mother, but I highly doubt that she would agree with that statement. I've just lost three sons, and my fourth son said that he's going to be defiant because he doesn't want to desert his other friends, and therefore – you know, she'll understand that. It's not so simple to believe that Mrs. Ryan is going to buy that story. You know, we've already saw, 80 minutes ago. So we're talking an hour and a half ago or many weeks ago. You know, the fact that, when they came to tell Mrs. Ryan, I mean, we know she's all alone. She's not going to be too happy, once the decision has been made that her fourth son is going to be coming home. I don't know if they told her or not. It'd be interesting. I never even thought about that. You think they told her?
I don't think so, just because
false hope.
Yeah, I think, they made the decision. But I don't think that they would have said, would have told her that, we're going to bring your fourth son home because of, all the chaos. They don't know if that mission is going to be successful or not. So they were going to do it. And then that way it would be a surprise. And I think especially, jumping ahead a little bit with the letter that actually gets sent, with him coming home, that is... like there's no implication that it felt like it was a surprise.
It wasn't a letter saying, as I told you last week, your son is finally coming home. Because you can imagine what the other letter would have been. Unfortunately, we thought last week that we were going to bring your fourth son James home, but by the time we got to him, he wasn't able to come. So I don't know. True. Yeah, but again, I mean, we talked about this back then in those scenes with Mrs. Ryan. I mean, she's only washing two teacups, and it's a very lonely house, basically. Not that Jimmy Ryan showing up is going to make it as rambunctious as it probably was when all four boys were there, but. Oh, well, I guess you got to take what you get from that perspective. And that's actually all I have to say about this minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
Yeah, I think that this, you know, what he says and the way he says it, I think it's one thing that I noticed during this watch especially is that I feel like the, you know, the even though the movie is about Private Ryan, I feel like a large chunk of the movie is kind of the character arc of Upham. And I, because whenever he first joins the company, you know, he's talking about how he was reading the, you know, he's reading a book about how, about the
Brotherhood.
Brotherhood of War and how, you know, as soldiers in your company, you create this bond, these bonds of brotherhood. And this is something that is realized with, you know, literally realized almost with Ryan that he has formed these bonds of brotherhood. And we do see it, you know, very slowly with Upham because and at first he's kind of you know, he's an outcast in the group, but then by the end he's really accepted into their group and he and almost in kind of a shocking way, you know, his final character arc, which happens at the end of this battle, is a little bit shocking and, you know, kind of reveals the horrors of war in a certain way. But yeah, that this is Private Ryan talking about, you know, he's not going to abandon these people who have become his brothers.
Correct. That's true. Again, with Upham, I think he bonded a little bit too well with Steamboat Willie. You know, more so than with the rest of the guys. I mean, Mellish is the one who opens up to him later on. You know, when he finally explains to him what FUBAR is. That's like the first crack in the ice, I guess you can say, from that perspective. But in some ways, I see that Upham joins the crowd, but doesn't, he still remains a little distant. He doesn't become a full-fledged member of the club.
Yeah, especially because, you know, Miller is always kind of protecting him from combat up until this upcoming final battle.
Well, because at that point he has to protect Ryan. You know, he's reached the second person he needs to, or the more important person for him to make sure he doesn't, nothing happens to him.
Right.
All right, great. So every Monday we have a segment called Maestro Monday, where my guest will give their top five John Williams movie themes or movie soundtracks, however you want to look at it. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Sure. You know, I'm kind of mostly going to be sticking with his you know, iconic scores and you know, it a lot of them are inseparable from the franchises as a whole, but you know, I'm going to start off and just go with Star Wars and you know, that is iconic. It's something that most of us have it's been with us for most of our lives, and it's especially as a franchise that keeps coming around, even though they've you know, he's I don't believe he does every score anymore, but you know, his influence is still ever present in pretty much any Star Wars product that's out there.
Okay.
And then for my number four, I'm gonna go with you know, a score that I think is one of his more it's him stretching a bit more. It whenever you hear it, you don't necessarily think it is a John Williams score because it's such a kind of a different musical genre, and that's Catch Me If You Can. I love that movie. And I love that score, especially that opening title sequence. It is just gorgeous. Number three, I'm gonna go with Jurassic Park. And again, that's not, you know, I can't say too much more about that. And that's another one where, again, I think the later movies, it aren't necessarily him, but his influence is kind of always there in the music. And that's just that main Jurassic Park theme is just incredible and iconic and sweeping and everything else.
Yeah, I'm sure Jay's happy that you put that on the list.
And my number two is Superman. And the, you know, I love that Richard Donner Superman movie. And kind of even coming back with James Gunn, you know, his trailer really leans in, you know, really wears its John Williams influence on its sleeve. And it's still just great to hear that. And that's, you know, those kind of three, you know, just to have three notes that really iconify Superman as a character. It just really works so well. And my number one, just even though like the franchise has kind of taken a hit due to the original author, but I think that it's kind of grown beyond her, and I can't, it's hard for me to separate my love of these characters and the world that's been presented to me, and that's Harry Potter. And you know, it's really the franchise as a whole, but I always go back to the Sorcerer's Stone as just really that element of wonder and magic that introduced us to this, you know, this magical world, as you know, as it's kind of called. But you know, I still love these characters, and Hedwig's theme especially is something that is magical, you know, without, you know, there's not really a better way to describe it.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. Now, I'm assuming you know this, but you know that Star Wars borrowed from Harry Potter for a few notes in the end of Revenge of the Sith.
No, I didn't catch that.
So at the end of Revenge of the Sith, when Obi-Wan is giving over the baby Luke to the Lars family, so they throw in a few Harry Potter notes there right at the beginning, right in the middle, you know, but the whole idea of it's the same notes that are used when Harry Potter is being dropped off, you know, at the Dursleys, right at the very beginning of the first movie. You know, the little chiming sound or whatever.
Yeah.
Very cool. I love how basically John Williams copied himself.
Copies himself. Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
Yeah. Okay, great. So thank you very much for that list. That is a great list. Would you like to tell everyone where they can find you?
Sure, I am a very busy podcaster, but I think I will start off with kind of my main and currently longest running podcast. It had over 200 episodes now. I'm on my sixth season, and that's It's Time to Rewind, and that's a kind of movies by minutes adjacent podcast where I take a look at time loops in movies and TV episodes, and I break them down one loop at a time. And you know, we're recording this on Groundhog Day, so my first season was Groundhog Day, and I broke that up into 36 episodes, one for each loop that we see Phil Connors appear in, you know, repeat over the course of that movie. And I alternate each season, I switch between movies and TV. So I then did The Twilight Zone. They had several time loop episodes. And then I did, let's see, Triangle and Time Crimes. And I did Buffy and Angel, because each of those had kind of one time loop episode. And then I kind of went time loop adjacent with Memento and 50 First Dates, which they're not a time loop per se, but I kind of feel like it from the perspective of, you know, from the main character's perspective, they are trapped in their own time loop because they're repeating the day after their accident, or in Leonard's case, you know, he's kind of repeating the same few hours or, you know, 20, 30 minutes cycle each time. And my current season, I'm doing British sci-fi, which is kind of focusing on Red Dwarf and Doctor Who, which both of them have had several time loopy episodes. And the kind of the main focus is the Jodie Whittaker Doctor Who Eve of the Daleks, which was kind of the true Groundhog Day style time loop, which I'm covering in 9 episodes. So that's been a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. Very cool. All right. Thank you very much for that. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. Find me on Twitter. You can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. You can find me on Instagram. And if you want to feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moviearoundminute@moviearound.net. So, until tomorrow, earn this.
Earn this. My solitude.